The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Section. Capitalism's Achilles Heel. Underlying the cyclical crisis is a longer-term tendency for capitalist growth to produce relatively diminishing returns. A tendency for the rate of profit, how much money is made over and above investment costs, to fall over time. We have already seen that the need to increase market share compels each capitalist to invest in technology that reduces the amount of labor time necessary to produce a particular commodity, and therefore its cost. The invention, for example, of the oxygen furnace to replace the open hearth furnace in the 1960s reduced the time it took to melt iron from 10 hours to 45 minutes. Over the past 30 years, the number of man-hours required to produce a ton of steel has dropped by 90% among many U.S. manufacturers. The capitalist, who is the first to use labor-saving technology, is able to undersell his or her competitors, at least until the competitors adopt the same methods. This boosts profits in the short term. But over time, it shrinks the role of the very element in the production process that produces profit, labor. How can we explain this? The working day can be divided into two parts, the paid and unpaid portion, as described earlier. Marx called that portion of the day in which workers produce the equivalent of their own wages necessary labor, and that portion of the day in which they work for the boss's profits, surplus labor. In product terms, a portion of the product when sold covers wages, the cost of materials, and the wearing down of machinery, and the other portion is extra, surplus value. Marx called the ratio of surplus labor time to necessary labor time the rate of exploitation. For example, if I work an 8-hour day, and it only takes 4 hours to make up the cost of my wages for the day, then I am working 4 hours of unpaid, surplus labor time, which makes for a rate of exploitation of 4 hours to 4 hours, or 100%. This rate of exploitation under capitalism is constantly increasing, because with increased productivity, the amount of time necessary to produce the necessities of workers goes down, leaving a greater portion of the day a grant of free labor to the capitalists. In other words, the time in the workday needed to replace the value of a worker's wage tends to go down, and the amount of unpaid labor as a result tends to go up. As a result of this, workers can actually receive a higher wage and still be exploited more than a worker who receives a lower wage. The reason this is true is because as productivity goes up and more wealth is produced, a worker may receive more in absolute terms, i.e., in terms of purchasing power, but may receive less relative wealth, i.e., compared to what the boss is raking in. As capitalism advances and grows, as it becomes more and more productive, the proportion between what a capitalist spends on technology and machinery, constant capital, and what a capitalist spends on wages, variable capital, grows. As productivity increases, labor becomes a relatively smaller and smaller component of production, and machinery a relatively larger and larger component. As capitalism advances, fewer and fewer workers set greater and greater amounts of machinery into motion. For example, changes in the productivity of printing mean that today a few people operating presses that fill an entire warehouse can print tens of thousands of newspapers in a matter of hours. One result of this is that as capitalism grows and requires less labor to produce more goods, more and more workers become superfluous. This poses a problem, however. Since labor is the source of surplus value, its shrinking role in production means that surplus value, as a percentage of the total capital, also shrinks. Capitalists measure their success not by the rate of exploitation, but by the rate of profit, that is, how much extra value they're getting compared to their total expenditure, which includes not only wages, but the cost of machinery and materials. Investing in new machinery leads over time to an increasing ratio of expenditure on machinery compared to labor. Since labor, unpaid labor, is the source of surplus value, even an increase in the rate of exploitation can't counteract this tendency for the rate of profit to fall. Ironically, the very process that capitalists employ to outbid their competitors and raise their short-term profits rates tends over time to run down the general rate of profit. If this tendency played out to its logical conclusion, this system would simply grind down to a snail's pace and eventually seize up. Capitalists would stop investing. But there are counteracting influences on falling profits that prevent it from reaching this point. Wages can be lowered below their value, and workers can be made to work harder. New inventions can not only reduce the amount of labor a given amount of capital sets in motion, but it can also cheapen the means of production and therefore reduce the cost of investment. And finally, as we have seen, the devaluation of capital brought about by crisis also reduces the cost of inputs. The decline in profits can also be offset by siphoning off some of the funds that could be used to invest in new machinery, and using them instead to invest in luxury goods, financial speculation, or military spending. In the decades following the Second World War, for example, high levels of U.S. government spending on the arms race siphoned off money that otherwise would have led to accelerated growth, and by moderating the rate of economic expansion, prolonged the post-war boom. But this permanent arms economy could only forestall crisis, not prevent its eventual reemergence. At a certain point, the diversion of funds toward military spending acted as a weight dragging down the United States in relation to its European and Japanese competitors, who, under the US-NATO military umbrella, were able to invest in more advanced production techniques and expand them into the private sector, without bearing the same cost of military expenditure. What first began as a means to prolong the post-war boom became, over time, a financial burden that intensified when the crisis finally came to a head in the 1970s. Like all living systems that go through cycles, the cycles of capitalism's birth are different from the cycles in its old age. This is true for two reasons. The first reason is that competitive capitalism, over time, has turned into its opposite. Monopoly capitalism. The relatively freer competition of early capitalism between small competing firms has given way to the concentration and centralization of capital into ever larger units, and the merging of competing firms has in its turn created a situation in which a small number of giant firms control entire industries, not just within nations, but internationally. Within international conglomerates, there is greater and greater planning, but anarchy still reigns in the world market as a whole. The character of competition between these giant firms becomes in some ways more regulated, involving greater and greater amounts of state intervention. But this is only because the potential impact of crises under these circumstances can be more severe. Crises become crises not of one country, but of the world market as a whole, because competition takes place between giant international firms whose operations span the globe. States that only have control of one patch of territory find it harder and harder to affect world economic policy through their manipulation of currency and interest rates, let alone the economy of their own national turf. But that doesn't mean that capitalism will simply collapse under its own weight as an old house crashes down from rot, an idea some have incorrectly attributed to Marxism. Challenging this idea, Trotsky, in comparing capitalism in its birth, maturation, and decay to the breathing of a human organism, nevertheless reminds us that capitalism, unlike human beings, does not die of natural causes, but only if the working class overthrows it. Quote, "A man keeps drawing breath until he dies, but a youth, an adult, and a dying man each breathe in a different way, and the body's health may be judged by the breathing. Nonetheless, a human being keeps breathing until death. Similarly with capitalism. The oscillation of these waves, these ups and downs, are inevitable so long as capitalism is not snuffed out by the victorious proletariat." End of chapter 4.